So we're going to be spending our time at least partially breaking down the two passages that Matthew just read for us in Timothy and Titus. Those lists are not identical to each other, but they both describe the same role, the same person who is tasked by Jesus to shepherd and to look after a local congregation of God's people that has been sorely needed ever since there were churches that called themselves after Jesus' name. Timothy and Titus were in two very different locations. So Timothy was left by Paul in the city of Ephesus to work with the congregation there. And Titus was left by Paul on the island of Crete to not just work with one congregation, but a whole cluster of congregations on that island who desperately needed a lot of help. Ephesus did too. So in both congregations, Titus and Timothy are given these passages in the letters that he writes to them so that they can be equipped to appoint people in their churches to help address the needs of these congregations. And there were a lot of needs. If you read the rest of 1 Timothy and Titus, there's a lot going on in these different groups and these different locations. And so what we're going to do is look at the qualities of who a shepherd is. What is he like? What kinds of things can we think about with his character? We're going to divide up these two passages into five different categories. Today we're mainly just going to look at his character and his habits. His character and his habits. There's a lot said about those two things. And then in the next lesson on next Sunday, then during the second hour, Lord willing, we'll get to part two of this. But I've got some general things to say about these two passages as a whole before we start diving into the actual list of these things. I think the main point of both of these passages that we've got to keep forefront in our minds whenever we read Titus and Timothy is this idea that we're looking for somebody to help us who is this, who is above reproach. Both passages, I don't know if you notice this, both passages start with this idea. And to be above reproach is the idea of blamelessness, not, and I think Mo talked about this last week too in his sermon on shepherds, it's not the idea of perfection, because otherwise nobody ever in any congregation would be appointed a shepherd. And Peter wouldn't have been a shepherd either. If you go to 1 Peter, I think it's 2 Peter 1, where Peter's talking about the shepherds that he's addressing himself to. He talks about himself as a shepherd. Do you think Peter had some things in his past that people in a congregation might point to and say, I'm not sure we want this person leading us? I mean, he flat out denied Jesus Christ three different times in front of a whole courtyard of people. I mean, can we honestly have him as a shepherd over us? Well, yes! Yes, because that was not characteristic of Peter's life. And that's really what all of these things are getting at. Not did he lose his temper one or two times 15 years ago. Well, I remember when he did this thing and I really ought to have been... No, what's his pattern of behavior? What is his general life course? Is it walking in light or is it walking in the darkness? We're looking for life patterns. How is he summed up? Is he above reproach or not? And like I mentioned earlier, it's when you look at these two passages, the list of qualities that you read in Titus and Timothy are not the same. Now, that's interesting because you think, and this kind of gets at, I'm just going to throw the rest of these up so I can get to this point. Do you think that Titus had the letter that was addressed to Timothy? I don't think so. And vice versa. So they had these different passages, but do you think they would have appointed the same men to be shepherds over the people in their churches? I think so. I think everybody can look at just Titus or Timothy and come away with the major ideas that you need to understand the kind of person who ought to fit into this role and the kind of person who's not qualified to do that. But it's interesting, if you go to Timothy, Timothy says he must not be a recent convert, he must be well thought of by outsiders, by people outside of the church, but Titus doesn't mention either one of those two things.
And if you think about all the character qualities that are not talked about here, do you think an elder needs to have the fruit of the Spirit? That he needs to have all things that Galatians talks about? Love, joy, peace, kindness, patience. Now, some of those things in the fruit of the Spirit, they're not talked about at all in these passages about the character qualities. So these are not comprehensive of every single good character thing that you might mention, that you might talk about. But we have enough that is here to give us a good sense of the direction to go when we think about who is qualified to be working with us and over us. And this is a really important point too, that these qualities are not things that he is aspiring to, that he is working towards, but he doesn't have them yet. These are not suggestions. These are not goals for someday. If you look at the text and the language of the passages, it's he must be these things. And there's a whole lot of must be's kind of sprinkled around in the text. So we got to make sure that we're not just working on these things. If we're thinking about this role, that we have to be them before we can be considered qualified for this role. A shepherd needs to show mastery over these things. And yes, Timothy and Titus did not likely have access to both lists, but they would have understood blamelessness and above reproachness from the passages that they did have. So with all that in mind, let's get into the character and the habits of what a shepherd should be like. Timothy mentions this in 1 Timothy 3, in that passage in verse 2, that he is to be somebody who is sober-minded. The idea of being sober-minded, and I've tried to look up all of these words in the Greek and to give you a little bit more of a description after the word so that we can try to help wrap our minds around all of these ideas. I often find it helpful to look at synonyms and to look at other words when I'm looking at passages like this. So being sober-minded is the idea of being restrained in your conduct. The idea that not every word that you think comes out of your mouth. Not everything that you think about to do is just something that you're going to do. That when your body says, I don't want to get up in the morning, that you tell your body, no, I'm getting up in the morning. That when your body says, I don't want to do my work very diligently or efficiently today, you tell your body, no, you're going to be restrained today. I'm going to hold you captive to my will. It's basically a conquering of your desires, of making sure that you are sober with that. And that often implies you're working towards specific goals. And you're being aware of things that can hamper your ability to serve in the kingdom. It's kind of like the idea, I think in 1 Peter 5, Peter talks about we've got to gird up the loins of our minds. And I love that idea. Like, you know, they wore loose clothing in ancient times. So basically, gather up the folds of your loose clothing so that you can run where you need to run. And be sober-minded because your enemy prowls around like a roaring lion. He's going to try to devour whoever he can. You got to be on guard against him. So sober-mindedness is not, he can never tell a joke. He's just a stoic. He never smiles. It's not that idea at all. It's just making sure that you have a direction you're going and you are bending your will to go in that direction and you're not getting sidetracked and you're not getting thrown off course. And it's similar to this idea that the verse in 1 Timothy 3:2 also talks about, but Titus 1 verse 8 mentions this as well. Being self-controlled is, using this also word, this word, sober, or being of sound mind, of being in control of oneself. There are a lot of people in both of these two areas that were not like this at all. You have people in Ephesus that Paul talks to Timothy about. They're teaching very strange things about the law. They think that they're teachers, but they don't have a clue about what they're talking about. You need to help them. And in that same context, you need to appoint elders in Ephesus to help you help them. And if they're of the circumcision party and they're upsetting families, you've got to shut them down. Titus is also full of passages about people who are dangerous people in the groups that he's working with. He's got to make sure that that doesn't go unchecked. So an elder has to be somebody who understands how to control himself so that he can help other people learn how to control themselves. That idea of you got to do this so that you can help others to do that is an often repeated idea in these contexts. Something else that's mentioned in this same verse in 1 Timothy 3 is this idea of respectability, or decorous, or well-ordered. An elder or shepherd has to be somebody who is generally on top of his life in a way that causes other people to look at him and say, okay, so he's a person who's not going to drop the ball on certain things. That if I give him a tether or something is entrusted to him, I don't have to worry about it anymore because he's somebody who keeps track of his commitments. That he does the things that he says he's going to do. He's responsible. And that's really comforting because that means that if he's this way with his life and his home, then you know that he's probably not going to let people fall through the cracks like they tend to do sometimes in a church situation. So we need people like this who are respectable. It's that kind of idea. And an elder should be somebody, going again back to this verse in 1 Timothy 3:2 and also Titus 1:8, in both places, hospitality is mentioned here. And I love the word hospitable. We're going to talk about that more in our Romans 12 sermons, because we're going to get to that. But basically, it means a lover of strangers, or somebody who is fond of guests. So not somebody that you are embracing and inviting into your life and your home and your heart because you know them already very well and you're very comfortable with them. No, it's somebody that you don't know very well at all, a stranger. But you are taking the initiative and you are reaching out to try to get to know them. So somebody who wants to be an elder, do they warmly embrace the people in the congregation who are harder to get to know than others are? Is this somebody who is standoffish or warm and friendly with people who come into our assemblies and join our group? Or somebody who doesn't really have much to do with people? So that all of that idea is wrapped up in hospitality. And this one is really important too. So in the next verse, after verse 2, verse 3 mentions, and Titus 1 also mentions, that he can't be a drunkard. Why is that one of the things that is brought out here? I mean, you would think that that would be kind of an obvious thing, and in some ways it is. But think about who a drunkard is. A drunkard is somebody who pursues a drug, who pursues alcohol, in this case, in order to not pursue other things in his life. Now, there might be other reasons to get drunk, but this is somebody who doesn't allow himself to be controlled by another substance outside of himself, something that he has mastery over, so that he can be of use to his family and his congregation. You know, think about how drunkards often want to escape reality, but what do we want a shepherd to do in a local congregation? We don't want him to escape reality. We want him to fully engage with the realities of our lives, don't we? Because sometimes we're not the best at this kind of thing. Maybe we're not actually imbibing alcohol. Maybe we're going to some other kind of drug or idol or way of escaping who we are and what is on our plates. But an elder needs to be somebody who comes alongside of us and says, so I'm seeing this about you. I'm seeing this in the scriptures. Let's talk about this reality that you're facing right now in your life, in your marriage, in your home, with your kids, with your money, with your job, whatever it might be. An elder has to be fully engaged with himself. And so that's what he needs to be himself, so that he can know how to help other people with their realities.
But if he's a drunkard, then he's just an escapist. And you don't want an escapist in this position, because that's not going to be helpful for anybody. Something else in this verse, in verse 3 of 1 Timothy, and also in this same verse in Titus 1:7, he cannot be a violent man. So not violent, or not a striker, or not a bully. So, you know, if he's somebody who is going around giving people black eyes, you know, that's a really obvious red flag there. But that's probably not going to be happening. I don't know too many people who just haul off and hit people all the time. And if you do know somebody, that's probably pretty rare. That's often like what you face in middle school or high school, maybe college. Usually you grow out of that. But sometimes what people have not grown out of is this idea of being a bully, of being somebody who practices intimidation tactics to get their way. So maybe they raise their voice more than they should in conversations to try to beat the other person down so that they can get what they want. Maybe they're the kind of person who always wants the last word in a conversation. Maybe they're the kind of person who is just never wrong. Not that they are truly never wrong, but they never admit that they are wrong. And they don't apologize. All they do is re-explain. Well, you must not be understanding me, so let's go through this again. Let's go through this again until the person finally crumbles or capitulates in some way. That's a bully. That's a bully. You cannot have a man in the eldership who's a bully. Because again, his job is to come alongside the people's lives and help them. Not to try to prove something about his own ego or his character, but to try to help them. An elder's going to get their buttons pushed. They need to be able to take that without becoming violent about that. Alright, something else, and this really goes into the next characteristic here. In 1 Timothy 3, it mentions he's got to be a gentle man. He's got to be patient, kind, courteous, tolerant. Basically means he's not rough. He's not insensitive about things. He's not a bull in a china shop. He's not going to be hitting people with 2x4s. He's approachable. He's not going to automatically become nasty or sarcastic or uppity or snappy. He's going to be able to convict people with the Bible by showing them the words of God and saying, this is what it is, and I can't change that, and I didn't write this book, but this is what you need to hear. But he's able to do it in such a way that he gets out of the way and people are able to just deal with Jesus. But that's really what this is all about. And that's something else that he mentions. By the way, you notice a lot of these words, a lot of these character qualities are revolving around some of the same ideas here. So this word also has to do with not being quarrelsome, not disposed to fight, not a brawler. There are plenty of people in the world, and some Christians that I know, who really like to argue. And they really like to be right. And that is probably the most important thing for them. We got to be on guard against that in our own lives, in our own hearts. This is not just something for elders. By the way, so many of these things are not just for shepherds, not just for men who are thinking about appointing to this role. These apply to everybody. Now, when we get into some of the family attributes, he's got to be the husband of one wife, he's got to have children who are believers. We get into some of those family roles, that is very unique and specific. Not everybody's going to be married, not everybody's going to have a family, but everybody has a character of some kind, right? What is your character? Are you looking like this? The elder has to be, must be these things, but isn't it true that all Christians must be these things? I just want to keep coming back to that idea because I don't want any of us feeling like we can get off the hook with this.
I'm certainly not trying to let myself off either. So he has to be not quarrelsome, because he's going to be dealing with some people who are, and he needs to not meet them at that kind of level. This is interesting too. He cannot be, in 1 Timothy 3, verse 3, a lover of money. He cannot be greedy or fond of it. 1 Timothy talks about how an elder who rules well is worthy of double honor. This goes back to another thing that Mo said in his sermon last week. We do have scriptural authority to pay elders for the work that they do. That's typically not done in congregations that I've been a part of or that I know of, but that is a perfectly appropriate thing to do in a congregation, to free them up so that they have some more time to devote to this awesome responsibility and job to care for us in the way that Jesus wants them to. But he cannot be somebody who really likes that. Really likes money. And I think in many cases, elders that I know do not take money, partly because of this, because they don't want to give the appearance of being somebody who is greedy and full of this desire. But how do you tell if somebody is a lover of money or not? How does that manifest itself? Because that's not something tattooed on people's foreheads. One thing that you might consider as you're thinking about this, is this somebody who gives his money away? Because you can have a really good, upright, character-rich, rich person who still is a lover of money. I think about the rich young ruler, who is a great person in so many ways. But when Jesus said, I want you to sell everything you have, I want you to give it to the poor, he wasn't willing to do that because he was a lover of money. So is this a type of person that helps other people financially, not just be warmly filled, not just, I love you, hope things go well, I'll be praying for you, but somebody who actually says, here's a check, here's some cash, you said you were hurting in some ways and you're trying to pay your electric bill, here you go. By the way, both the elders that we have are not lovers of money. I know that from personal experience. You can't have a man who's like that, because all sorts of things are going to be out of whack in his life and the congregation if that is the case. Something else that goes back to he's got to be not quarrelsome, he's got to be gentle, he's got to be self-controlled, is also this idea that's flat out said in Titus 1:7, he cannot be an arrogant man. He cannot be self-willed, self-pleasing, because he's going to have to be strong. He's going to have to stand on truth with people who confront that. But he has to be able to bend his will to Jesus if he discovers that he himself is wrong about something. We're all going to be wrong at some point. But the question is, how do we respond to that? How do we react to that? Do we just point fingers the other way, like Adam did, like Eve did in the garden? That is the constant temptation for every one of us when we're confronted by sin or by a perspective that is right that we don't currently have that we need to change to. Arrogance is going to get in the way of all of that with our own characters, and it's going to get in the way of that when we're trying to help other people. We need to be able to apologize. We need to be able to admit, I made a mistake. If we can't, then we shouldn't be in this position. Something else. Titus 1:7 says he's not quick-tempered, or he's not soon angry or irascible. You think about the anger of God. You know, he created us with the capacity for anger. And it's not inherently sinful. Ephesians says, be angry and do not sin. But what does it also say? Do not let the sun go down on that anger. That's the way that God is. God is not soon angry. It takes him a very long time to heat up. When he does heat up, it is terrible to behold. But then he's looking for ways to get rid of his anger too, so he can deal with it and move on and display his love and affection for us. And so an elder cannot be somebody who flares up very quickly. Even when he's provoked, even when he gets stuck with needles, he's got to be able to take that for the good of not just his soul, but the good of the sheep that need to be helped. And I think it's interesting that Titus 1 just says he's got to be a lover of good. Just got to love goodness. Isn't that neat? He's got to be, or another way of saying it, he's got to be a promoter of virtue. I mean, he's got to be happy when he sees people around him doing good things for the Lord. He can't be colored by, you know, I'm not sure about this person, I don't really like them very much. If they're doing good, that's to be celebrated. It's kind of like when Jesus was approached by the apostles. I see this guy who's not following us. He's casting out demons. He's performing miracles. Should we shut him down? Jesus says, no. He's on our side. He's doing good. We should rejoice in that. It's pretty much the opposite of 2 Timothy 3:3, where Paul says, in the last days, some people are not going to love good. An elder has to be the opposite of that. So, when you look at his life, do you notice him loving good things, of choosing entertainment that loves good things, of doing good things with his time, of helping other people in good ways? And a similar idea in Titus chapter 1, verse 8, he's got to be upright, or just, or equitable, or fair. Because he's going to be making a lot of really difficult judgment calls that require a lot of scriptural wisdom. And if he is swayed by every phone call and every email and every conversation that he has with everybody around him, then he's not going to be this. He doesn't need to be popular. He doesn't need to make decisions based on trying to please other people around him, which is such a temptation, especially when you are in leadership roles and positions. You want to just make people happy so they just calm down, leave you alone. He cannot be driven by that desire. It's got to be what is true, even if it is the harder road to travel. What is true? And how do we help people understand that? That is not always going to win you brownie points with the congregation that you serve. But King Jesus will approve of that. And it's his opinion at the end of the day that really matters, isn't it? He's the one that we're going to be standing before on Judgment Day, and we're going to answer to him. We're not going to answer to everybody else. So we need to be upright. An elder should be upright, just, equitable, and fair. And he should be holy, pious, devout, sanctified, hallowed, pure. Not just in his attitudes, but also in his actions. And this has to be the driver of all of the good things that he's trying to do for Jesus. So when he comes to church, it cannot just be because that's the way his family grew up or that's the expectation of other people, but because he loves to spend time with Jesus' people, worshiping Jesus with them. And when he opens his Bible every day, it has to be because he loves the Word of God, and he considers it holy and upright in his life. And when he prays for himself and his family, but also for all of the rest of us, it's got to be because he loves Jesus' people, because we are a holy, sanctified, set apart people for God. Peter talks about that. He's got to be a man who is disciplined. Titus chapter 1, verse 8, temperate in one's emotions and impulses, has his desires under control. It's very much like Proverbs chapter 29, verse 11. A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. You notice how that verse didn't say, a fool gives vent to his spirit in public, but in private, man, he just lets it go. Now this is a man's character, not just in places where other people can see him, but also in places where nobody can see him, when he's just with a small handful of people. A disciplined man never lets himself completely go. go. Which relates to all these other words that we've looked at earlier. So again, I don't think any of us, when we look at ourselves, or we think about anybody who might aspire to this position, nobody is going to be perfect in doing all of these things. Are there times where you're undisciplined? Yeah, I can say that for myself. Are there times when you're unholy or not upright, not loving good like you should? But again, the question of all of these different passages, when we look at, it's probably a long way back. The question again, when we think about all of these character traits individually, they all again go back to this central idea. Is he a man that generally speaking has mastered himself? Not so much mastered himself, but has allowed Jesus to master him. Is probably a better way of saying that. So that's our goal. To be people who are like that ourselves. And if we're looking for a man to help us with all those things, he's got to be, he must be these things himself. So that he can know how to serve us. Amen. So that's the lesson for this morning. We're about to sing a song. Sorry. Calm down. We're about to sing a song about how there is a judgment day that is coming, when we will all stand before the chief shepherd, and not just elders, but all of us are going to give an account for the lives that we led here on this earth. And this opportunity is now here for you to declare to us as a congregation that you would like to more closely devote yourself and your life to the Lord. And so if you want to study about Him, if you want to talk to some of us about Jesus, you can come forward and you can confess that, you can talk about that with all of us here, or you can see me or one of our shepherds or some other member of this group after all of this assembly is done with. But if you need help today, please don't leave this assembly without making those needs known. Because we're not God. We can't read your mind or your heart. We don't know what's going on inside of everybody's lives. We try to, as best we can. That's our job, to try to be with each other and helping each other. But some things we just don't know about until you talk about those things. So please... please let those be known. We'd like to help any way that we can. As together we stand up and we sing the invitation song.